Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You are listening to CAUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, here with Carl Orzechowski, bringing us the news. And I'm hoping maybe you'll jump in today, too.
Maybe I will.
We could do a little co-hosting. I'm really excited about today's interview. We're speaking with a founder and board member from Pro Anima, a group from Brazil that does some really interesting advocacy work for animals. We're going to talk about some of the concrete campaigns and changes they've been able to create for animals and what's left to be done. So that'll happen at about the quarter after point. We'll be speaking with Simone de Lima from Pro Anima. But before we do that, we'll go to a little bit of news. Should let people know that we have over 250 programs that are archived on our website. You can download any of those for free by going to animalvoices.ca. And if you'd like to contact us, we'd love to hear from you. We have some interesting shows coming up. And if you have any suggestions about other programs you'd like to see in the future, do let us know. You can write us at animalvoices@gmail.com. Without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Carl, who's going to bring us some news.
Thanks, Lauren. The first news piece today coming to us from globeandmail.com. The headline is, Some Albertans Bucking to Make Rodeo the Province's Official Sport. In a cowboy hat nod to Alberta's Wild West past, there's a public push on to declare rodeo the province's official sport. The Alberta legislature is expected to vote on the idea today, but already opposition leader Kevin Taft's attempt to corral it into a successful private member's motion has been met with surprising resistance. In Calgary, home of the world-famous Calgary Stampede, an editorial in a local newspaper this month called the proposal bizarre. The editorial suggested Mr. Taft's motives are political and concluded that the leader of the Alberta Liberal Party, quote, appears to have taken a hoof to the head, end quote. The Edmonton Journal received letters criticizing the idea. Congrats, Kevin Taft, on trying to pander to the lowest common denominator of Alberta's electorate, one reader wrote. Mr. Taft, who has long been criticized for being out of touch with rural Alberta voters, is stepping down as Liberal leader later this year. The cash-strapped party lost several seats in last March's provincial election. Animal rights groups have denounced Mr. Taft's proposal and are shocked it came from the Liberals and not the right-wing Progressive Conservatives, which have governed the province since 1971. If the motion passes, Alberta would become only the second province in Canada with an official sport. In 2001, Saskatchewan became the first when it adopted curling. In 1994, the Canadian government passed a law recognizing lacrosse as the country's official summer sport and hockey as its official winter sport. Despite the controversy his idea has aroused, Mr. Taft is hopeful the motion will be adopted. Quote, it seems like a natural, he said. Albertans love hockey and football and so on, but there is no sport that's Alberta quite like rodeo. It's part of our heritage. Mr. Taft rejects claims his idea is politically motivated. Quote, for anybody to think that this is somehow going to give a breakthrough to the Liberals in rural Alberta is a bit ridiculous, he said. It's a good idea, at least I think it's a good idea. About the concerns of animal rights groups, Mr. Taft says he's confident that rodeo standards have vastly improved over the years, and animal safety and welfare issues are now, quote, taken very seriously by those in the sport. Rodeo competitions, which feature events such as bull riding and calf roping, are held in many Alberta communities every summer, including Raymond, Alberta, which holds claim to the country's oldest stampede. Located southeast of Lethbridge, the town of 3200 has been hosting a rodeo every July 1st since 1902. Raymond Mayor George Bone said the event is popular, but attendance has been dwindling over the years. He said Mr. Taft's proposal would be an excellent way to remind all Albertans, and even the entire country, about the oil and gas-rich province's humble ranching beginnings. And the next story coming from journal-online.co.uk. The headline is, Activist Cleared as Oxford Opens Animal Testing Facility. Mel Broughton Cleared of Terrorism Charges as Bombing Investigation Hits a Dead End. As Oxford's controversial testing center opened this month, an animal rights activist accused of carrying out arson attacks against an animal research laboratory as it was being constructed has been acquitted. Mel Broughton, 48, a leading figure of animal rights group Speak, was charged with carrying out two arson attacks with homemade pipe bombs on the Oxford University buildings in November 2006. The construction began in 2003, but was suspended for 16 months after threats from anti-vivisection groups forced the university to seek an injunction against protesters in order to protect laborers and staff at the site. The opening of the world-class testing facility will see thousands of rats, mice, monkeys, ferrets, and other species being experimented on as part of research into HIV, heart disease, leukemia, and other forms of cancer. Many activists, however, see this development as a serious breach of animal rights. Michelle Thu of the British Union for the Abolition of Vivisection said, quote, "Like the majority of the British public, I want to live in a world where no one wants or believes it's necessary to test on animals. It is therefore depressing that in a collective failure of imagination, our leading institutions are choosing to repeat the failed patterns of the past rather than investing in the future. Humanity will pay a price until our public money goes into modern, humane, reliable, non-animal research to deliver cures for diseases," end quote. Oxford University staff have begun moving batches of mice into the 18 million pound facility this month, with more animals to be introduced over the coming months. Scientists argue that animal testing is the only way of conducting important research into worldwide diseases such as HIV. Alistair Buchan, head of medical sciences at the university, said, quote, "Unfortunately, there is a tension, and there always will be a tension, between our needs and our patients' needs, and those who seek to protect animals from any form of harm. The reality for those of us who look after the sick and sadly the disabled is that we cannot get away from our need for careful, well-monitored, and meticulously regulated use of animals for biomedical research," he said. Police and prosecuting authorities have expressed their disappointment with the Broughton verdict, and with no other suspects and no substantive leads, the investigation into the bombings has hit a dead end. And finally, the last story coming to us from CBC News. The headline is, "Killing Pond Inlet Narwhals, a, quote, humane harvest," says the DFO. As hunters in Pond Inlet, Nunavut, continue to cull about 200 narwhals trapped in the sea ice, federal officials say it's the most humane way to deal with the whales. Several narwhals have been killed since residents found the whales near the northern Baffin Island community on November 15th, trapped in shrinking areas of open water surrounded by ice. Federal officials with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, which is monitoring the situation, said the narwhal cull seems to be the most humane way to deal with the trapped animals. Local elders advised hunters to kill the narwhals soon as they would drown, as the ice grows around them. Quote, "If it's possible to help the whales to get out of the predicament they're in, we'd try that. But apparently the floe edge is so far away that the whales are very unlikely to be able to escape," department official Keith Pelly told CBC News. "So basically we're calling it a humane harvest of the whales so that they won't suffer and die. Hunters will not exceed their narwhal hunting limits for this year and next year because of the hull, given the special circumstances surrounding the situation," Pelly added. Jaco Alulu, chairman of the Miti Metallic Hunters and Trappers Organization in Pond Inlet, told CBC News that the cull is going smoothly and people have been taking turns hunting the whales over the last few days. Members of the Hunters and Trappers Organization decided late last week to keep hunting until all the narwhals have been killed, Alulu said in Inuktitut. Peely said it would be more sensible to harvest all the whales than it would be to deploy a Canadian Coast Guard ship to Pond Inlet to break up the sea ice and free the whales. "Seeing that there's not a conservation concern with these whales being harvested, we have not deployed a Coast Guard ship," Peely said, adding that a ship would have to be sent up from southern Canada. Quote, "We don't see any economical reason or any reason why the boat or ship should go there to cut out these whales." While this week's call will not affect narwhal hunting quotas in Pond Inlet, Pelly said hunters will still have to attach hunting tags to every whale they kill to monitor the number of whales taken. Alulu said hunters won't say how many whales have been harvested until the call is over. And that is the news.
Thanks, Carl. Today we're going to speak with a founder and board member from the group Pro Anima. And my Portuguese isn't so good, so I'm not going to be able to pronounce this in Portuguese, what the translation is. And we are speaking with Simone de Lima today, who is, as a founder and a board member of this organization. We've had a lot of changes and doing a lot of agitating for animals, advocacy for animals over the past little while, specifically around circuses. But we're going to talk about all sorts of issues today. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Simone to the program. How are you?
Good. How are you, Lauren? Thank you so much for having me.
I'm good. And we're reaching you in Washington today.
Right, yes. I'm spending some time here and adding to our knowledge base and trying to take as much advantage of being here as possible, networking, going to the conferences, so I can take the knowledge back home.
And we're highlighting the work that you do, obviously, with ProAnima, but you're also a professor.
Yeah, I teach developmental psychology at the University of Brasilia and focus on work with communication and developmental disabilities. That's my day job.
How do you find time to do the work with ProAnima? Must be very busy.
We're all very busy back home. We're all, it's an all-volunteer group. We don't have a paid staff as of yet, although that is where we're wanting to move in the direction of. But I don't know. We just we just have to find the time because the issues are very pressing. So it's nights and weekends and, you know, running in and out. Everyone is, we're all students. Lots of people are public employees because it's in the capital of Brazil.
Mm.
Lots of people are teachers, lawyers, what have you. I mean, we're from all paths of life united to help the animals there, because really, until we were founded, there were no animal protection organizations established in the capital. So the issues are basically every single issue under the map in terms of animal protection there.
So take us back to 2003 when the organization was founded. What were some of those pressing issues that brought the group together? What were the things that people organized around first?
Initially, companion animals. Maybe I can step back a little and say that I'd come to grad school in Massachusetts and adopted an animal from the MSPCA. And I was really busy in grad school and thought, oh, maybe when I go back home, I can volunteer in an organization there in Brazil. And I went back in 2001, and there was nothing to volunteer in. There were a couple of women who kind of protected slash hoarded animals. The line between protection and hoarding is kind of a fine line in Brazil. And really, I didn't find an organization in which I could volunteer, and having adopted Molly, this gorgeous lab mix, who was, you know, had all sorts of issues but also became like really important in the lives of my whole family, it just reconnected me to the need to do something for animals. And between 2001 and 2003, I kind of thought and was happy to meet like-minded people who wanted to do something beyond, you know, just rescuing the odd animals here and there. We wanted to do action that was more political in the broad sense, that could really reach the roots of the issues. And at that time, we were thinking mainly companion animals. We were thinking mainly the issue of 30,000 dogs and cats in the streets in Brasilia. Absolutely no spay-neuter programs, mass culling of animals in a gas chamber, and that's what brought, you know, pet trade with no regulations. So that's what brought us together, trying to figure out alternatives in terms of population control, in terms of zoonotic disease control, education of the public. There was absolutely no awareness of adoption as an option, no awareness of the rights of the animals, of the legislation that was already in place, widespread ignorance about animal abuse, both in terms of how to care for animals and also that they were at that point already protected by law, because Brazil does have a pretty progressive legislation. The issue is enforcement.
Mm. So in terms of enforcement then, can you tell us about what changes are possible? Has the group been able to push for increased enforcement, people out there making sure that the laws are upheld?
Yeah, I think even though you know, we get frustrated because, of course, there are still gigantic issues with enforcement. I can tell you the first time we stepped into a police department in 2003 about an animal abuse case, the police chief laughed at us. He just laughed out loud, and he completely ignored the legislation. We had it in our hands. He said we were dreaming, and we just spent a really frustrating afternoon in the police department and came back and really had nothing to do. It was terrible. And what I can tell you is, looking back, you know, from 5 years, we have much more, we're much more respected in police departments around the city, around the country also. There have been cases of prosecution. We've had one case that led all the way up to prosecution, and the person was not in prison, but he did spend time in the police department and had to pay. He had to be bailed out. We've had cases of animals being seized, both domestic animals and circus animals and horses. We have much more of a collaboration going with lots of the police departments, with the judicial system. So even though the penalties are still low to our liking, it's much more out there in the press. Many more police departments know that the law is there. We distribute educational materials both to the public and to the police, telling them these are the laws, this is how you apply the laws, this is how, to the public, we, you know, we go and say, we tell the people we have educational materials they can actually take into the police department with all the laws that apply to each case, so people can refer to those laws if the police doesn't know about the laws, which is pretty common. But it's getting less and less common, and we're finding more and more of the police officers aware or at least sensitized to the issue enough that they're actually happy when they hear that there is a law they can use, because they do like animals sometimes, and they're just enthusiastic. We've had cases where we've gone to really shady police departments in some tough areas of town, and we thought no one's going to pay attention to us here. People are coming in, you know, having been stabbed and all of these things are going on, no one's going to pay attention, and then be happy to find someone who is a fan of Animal Planet and wants to be like our ally. And so we've networked, and there's progress. Of course, it's when we look at the scope of animal suffering, you know, especially the new volunteers get discouraged because there's so much going on, and there are so few of us, but I like to take them back to that day in 2003 when, you know, we were just laughed at in the police department. That definitely doesn't happen anymore. I mean, we have a tough time getting cases prosecuted, but there's much more awareness out there.
Can you give us then a brief sketch of some of the legislation that does exist? You know, who is covered? What kind of abuses are animals protected against? I know that Pro Anima has been working very hard on trying to get animal use in circuses banned, but maybe if you could give us a general sketch of sort of the of Brasilia right now and where the legislation is at.
Okay. We actually have very good laws federally. Our new constitution of 1998 declares that animals are protected by the state, and that's all animals, and not only companion animals, but there are no exemptions to the animals. Then, also in 1998, the Environmental Protection Law actually included all animals in one of the articles. It declares that any form of cruelty, animal abuse, is a crime. It's actually a felony level crime, and against any kind of animal. So cruelty to animals in general, there are no exemptions. Farm animals aren't exempt. No animals are exempt in this article of the law. It's maybe one of the most encompassing laws in the world, and it's also kind of because of that reason, it's a double-edged sword in the sense that it's very encompassing, and we can use it for pretty much anything. But on the other hand, it's kind of hard to be enforced because it gets all kinds of interpretations. And that's why we need specific bans on specific practices. So we've been working at the local level and at the federal level on a ban in the use of animals in circuses. We already have 4 states and now I think 41 municipalities that have banned the use of animals in circuses. And we're very close to approving a federal ban on the use of animals in circuses. Hmm. That's being stalled. We had a hearing. We were supposed to have a hearing November 4th, and that didn't happen. But Animal Defenders International actually came in to primetime television on Sunday night with their recent video of abuse of animals in circuses, and that had a gigantic repercussion.
Hmm.
And we've networked with them, with the Great Ape Project, with World Society for Protection of Animals, and this has really had a lot of impact on the way the mainstream Brazilian public has seen the issue of animals in circuses. And that did help a lot with the position of the members of Congress.
Mm.
So we're really hoping that towards the beginning of the legislative year in early January, we'll be able to get this voted in the House and then up to the Senate again. And we have a better chance, I think, this round of getting that approved. Apart from that, in the state of São Paulo, killing animals in shelters, animal pounds, companion animals, mm-hmm. have been outlawed. We still haven't been able to get a law like that in Brasilia. The situation with the health department in Brasilia is very tense. So we don't have mandatory spay neuter or the prohibition of killing the animals in pounds yet in state. But the fact that it's in place in São Paulo, it kind of tends to lead the way in terms of legislation. The state of São Paulo is the largest and richest state, so we might get there. We've managed to ban the use of cart horses in the center of the city in Brasilia and the major highways. And basically, most of the cart horses are now outlawed one way or another, either because they can't be on that specific street or because they're just not, there are minimum welfare requirements that we managed to pass that basically ban their use. And now we're working with the Environmental Protection Agency and the local authorities that inspect these animals. Most of them are abuse cases. So our big campaign for the coming year is to get all of these animals retired and into retirement homes. We don't have a sanctuary, and we don't have the structure to have a sanctuary, but we do have lots of people who have small farms and are volunteering retirement homes for these horses. And we've managed to send off to retirement about a dozen, or close to 20, but it's now that we've got the laws in place to actually seize most of them and then start a big campaign towards retiring them.
Okay. Just jumping back to circuses, although I'd like to address all of those animal issues that you did mention, but for some people listening, and certainly one of the debates within the animal movements is this debate about regulation versus abolition, and I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more specifically about why a ban as opposed to regulation of animals and circuses is being pushed by Pro Anima. And just for people who don't know about what the circus conditions are like, can you make a case about why this is an important issue and why the ban is significant?
Definitely, yes. There have been calls, not amongst any of the animal groups in Brazil, but from the circus owners, that there should be a regulation of the use of the animals in circuses. And absolutely no, even welfare groups in Brazil are against that idea, basically because there is no way that an animal, especially a wild animal, an animal that's originally wild, like elephants, lions, we have elephants, lions, bears, hippos, rhinos, giraffes, zebras, and camels being used in Brazilian circuses as of now. An estimated, if we don't count ponies and dogs, We have an estimated 300 animals. Just got the data yesterday. Most of those are lions in circuses in Brazil today. There is absolutely no way that any of these animals could lead a sane life in a circus environment, because even if, let's say, they were not abused, which we know they are in terms of their training, in terms of the conditions they live in, just the very fact that they're living in isolation from their conspecifics, that, or that they're living close to animals that might terrorize them in the wild, that they have not enough space to roam. I mean, an elephant roams 40 miles a day in its natural habitat, and they're caged up. They don't have the possibility of exhibiting their natural behaviors. They don't have the possibility of living in their social groups. These are not add-ons. These are not luxury items. They are absolutely necessities for these animals to be these animals. I mean, what we have in a circus is not an elephant. It's a specter of an elephant. It's like a degraded, you know, the soul has been removed away version of this animal. And so it's absolutely incompatible to house an animal in a condition like this, with the kind of transportation, with the kind of tricks they're performing, with the kind of life in isolation. So absolutely, there is no disagreement within the Brazilian groups that these animals should not ever be in circuses in the first place. This is an inheritance of a colonialist attitude. We know that, you know, as third world people, we know that people from the third world were also exhibited in circuses in the past. You know, people, it was just a way of showing colonial power, was going to Africa and South America, bringing back some animals, bringing back some people to show in circuses and freak shows and that kind of thing. So that's the kind of awareness that we're putting out there. And whereas people in the past, you know, in general, thought, oh, this is my right to see. I have the right to see an elephant. I think that when we actually speak to the public, and we've been very patient and caring in the way we talk to the public, most people come around. They really do. I mean, I feel like in the poll that was carried out after this primetime television show on Sunday night, 97% of the public said they would like to see animals banned from circuses. That was an internet poll just after the program was aired. So I think that the general public is coming around and saying that it's not a case of, are these animals being hit or not? Their existence in the circus is abusive, per se. So there's no regulation. There's no vet on call or better food or a few more inches cage-wise that will make it possible for them to be in circuses.
I think we're going to take a short break there. It's a good place to just maybe stop and reflect on that. We're going to come back and keep talking about Pro Anima, maybe go back and talk about those two other issues you raised, the calling of cats and dogs, and also the cart horse issue as well. So, Simone, if you please stay on the line, we'll come back after a short break.
Great, thanks.
Thanks.
Hello, we're back on Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Just had a couple of quick announcements to make. The first announcement is that we received some information from Milan Joseph that we wanted to pass along to you. He is the founder of the first vegetarian food bank, I believe, in Canada, and he wanted to let us know that the food bank is very much in need of donations and volunteers. So once again, the Ontario Vegetarian Food Bank, please do give them a call. You can call their helpline at 416-744-4357. And if you call there, you can get information as well on how to make a donation. They're always seeking donations of vegetarian food. And if you can donate time in lieu of food or along with food, that would be great as well. And the second announcement coming to us from our friend Kristen, she wanted to pass on a message from Action Volunteers for Animals, which is an organization in Unionville. They are having a cat adopt-a-thon this week at the PetSmart on 225 High Tech Road in Richmond Hill. It is happening all this weekend, November 28th, 29th, and 30th, 2008. And it is in celebration of Sonia Curiel's life commitment to caring and rescuing animals. Come out and bring your friends to this Adopt-a-thon weekend in honor of Sonia's dream as we seek loving and caring forever homes for her cats. We welcome all to adopt a cat to bring home, to share with them your love that they so desperately seek. Let's make this Adopt-a-thon weekend a huge success, with many of these furry creatures being adopted out and truly given a second chance. So once again, that is a message from Action Volunteer for Animals. Their phone number, if you want to get a hold of them, is 416-439-8770. And again, the Action Volunteers for Animals Cat Adopt-a-thon weekend is happening this weekend, November 28th, 29th, and 30th, at the PetSmart at 225 High Tech Road in Richmond Hill. And if you want to reach the PetSmart, it's 905-764-6116. And we're back.
Hi, welcome back to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM. I should mention as well, if you're curious to learn more about the Ontario Vegetarian Food Bank, you can go to our website. We did do an interview with Milan Joseph, and he introduced us to what the organization has been trying to accomplish. And he was stressing to me on the phone a couple of days ago that as the holidays are approaching, that that they're really looking for more donations, and any kind of generosity that you can provide to them would be very greatly appreciated. So you can go and check out that interview that we did with him on our website, animalvoices.ca. Today we're speaking with Simone de Lima, who's the founder and board member of Pro Anima, a group from Brasilia, Brazil. And she's also a university professor, developmental psychology at the University of Brasilia. It's my great pleasure to have her here today. Before the break, we were talking about circuses and the reasoning behind the ban of the use of animals in circuses in Brazil. And Simone, I really appreciated that you put that industry in context and talked about the colonial history. And I was wondering if you could take us through some of the other issues. You mentioned dog and cat calling in the streets, and you also mentioned the cart and horse issue. And I was wondering if you could tell us more about those for people who maybe aren't familiar with those issues, or why they're such a great concern to Pro Anima and other people in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. So in Brasilia, we have an estimated 30,000 dogs and cats in the street. A part of those are kind of semi-housed animals, just because people don't in the suburbs don't have the means to erect fences around their house. In Brazil, we have like the opposite of North America. The suburbs are the poor areas, and Brasilia is a very modern city with a very rich core, and is surrounded by basically shanty towns. And there's a lot of abandonment of animals. There are no spay-neuter initiatives. We have held a spay-neuter initiative in a poor community, but that was suspended due to lack of funds. We're reorganizing now in terms of more substantive and fundraising to get that off the ground and show that it is possible to keep the population under control in a poor community. But we also have to do a lot of awareness work with the middle class to show that it's a good idea to be distributing puppies and kitties around the city. People just tend to think that they will find homes, but it's not the case. And lots of homes are found, but then the animals are abandoned when they start to get troublesome, when they start to, when people move, when people change their ideas. So that's a gigantic issue. And all the government does is collect these animals and gas them to death. We've been working hard to change the hearts and minds of the federal, of the local health authorities, but we've had more leeway with other areas of the government, not with that. It's just a very old school established team. They never change. Governments change and they don't change. And they just really think that they should be gassing these animals. So we are going to go now through the legal system and have a lawsuit, because there are contradictions with our law. you know, if abusing and cruelty to animals is outlawed, this is what the government is actually doing by taking these animals in and killing them in gas chambers. So we are going to, you know, we've tried to dialogue routes and it hasn't worked.
How extensive is the problem exactly?
They've been killing 300 to 400 dogs and cats a month, and a population of 30,000 animals in the street is kept, of course, because, you know, you remove a couple, you remove a few hundred out of a thousand. If they're still breeding, if there are no spay-neuter initiatives, we only have 2 vet clinics that do once a week low-cost spay-neuter. That's definitely not enough for a city of 2 million people. We need a lot more. We need a whole task force of vets spaying and neutering, doing that on a focused base, and also working with education so people will restrain from breeding their animals. So it's huge. I mean, we get at least 20 calls a day or emails a day saying, look, I found this animal on the street. There are lots of animals that are ran over. There's nowhere to take them. It's really a sad and shameful situation for the capital of the country. That, you know, kind of prides itself on being a modern capital with, you know, it was all built in the 60s, it's very futuristic architecture, it's our federal government site, so it's almost a medieval situation with the cats and dogs, and people are in despair about it, and lots of people care but don't know exactly what to do. So far, I think our the ground we've managed to cover is to bring more awareness about spay-neuter, so more people who have the resources are voluntarily spaying and neutering their animals. We've raised awareness of how wrong it is to be killing these animals, so that when we actually have the lawsuit being judged, there will be more public pressure to have it, you know, go through. And so, and we've worked more in terms of learning about alternatives. We have the numbers showing that it's actually more economical to be spaying and neutering than culling these animals. But it's a huge issue, especially because now we have a disease called leishmaniasis. It's a mosquito-borne disease. It affects people and dogs, and the government, instead of going after the mosquito, doing mosquito control, they've been culling dogs that are or not affected with the disease, because the exams they do, they're carrying out ELISA and RIF exams that are not very accurate. So it's a lot of work, but we have, I think, today more vets on our side, more members of the public on our side, and I feel like we had to build this awareness first before actually fighting the government, because in the beginning we were just perceived as, you know, bleeding hearts. I mean, I think definitely the main argument is compassion. There's nothing wrong with the argument of compassion, but we have more technical expertise and more numbers and data to back us up.
How do you understand the cultural context that you're working within? I was interested in the information that you sent me. You talked about one of the past programs where Pro Anima went into a poor community and tried to talk with people about the different beliefs that they had about animals, the sense that it's really trying to meet people where they're at. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit, before we talk about the cart horse issue,
right.
Could you give us a bit of a map of some of the different cultural perceptions about animals? I mean, clearly it's reflected very positively in the legislation that there's such progressive legislation about animals. So it just seems like a set of contradictions in some ways.
It does. I mean, Brazil is a huge country. It's larger than the continental U.S. And it's also very sadly one of the countries in which there is the poorest distribution of wealth in the world. So you will have from the most, you know, educated sectors of society to people who are illiterate. You will have people who, you know, are on par in terms of consumer goods with the developed world, and people who go hungry. And that also goes for the cultural perception and awareness of animals, although it doesn't divide that well. I mean, we've seen cases, horrible cases of animal cruelty from, you know, very people who care a lot about animals that just don't have the means to deal with them. When we went into this community, this was actually our spay neuter initiative in a small shanty town close to Brasilia. A lot of people, including our volunteers, thought, oh, we're going to see, you know, a lot of abuse because this is a poor community and people don't know how to look after their animals. Well, people did not have the means to sometimes feed and vaccinate and definitely not spay neuter their animals. But we met a lot of people who really, really cared about their animals. And we made it our point, we so that we could understand the population dynamics, where these animals were coming from, how these animals were looked after. We interviewed 20% of the houses in the community to get a sense of the number, the real population, the dynamics, and also the care practices. And we made it a point that we should listen to these people and see, you know, how they were caring for these animals instead of coming in and saying, this is what you have to do. And we did find a lot of receptivity, especially amongst the women, for spay and neuter. There's a lot of the machista culture of not wanting the male dogs, especially fixed by men. On the other hand, lots of the women just said, you know, my husband doesn't even look at this dog a lot, so just come in the morning when he's asleep and take it and fix it.
Right.
So there was things like people were really disturbed by the cries of the cats in heat, of, you know, the female cats in heat on the roof. So that was a big argument that actually went into the material that we distributed. We waited until we heard people's arguments for spaying and neutering mm-hmm. their animals, you know, while we talked to them. You know, oh, do you think it's a good idea if we spay and neuter a cat? And they would say, well, they stop yelling because, on top of my roof, because I work long hours and I come home and I can't sleep. So that was kind of the top argument. We hadn't thought of that. Because, you know, lots of us lived in apartments or in houses where there weren't so many stray cats. And it's really listening to the community and getting their arguments. Lots of the women were very sympathetic for their female dogs and cats. They were really concerned. You know, they knew what it was like to have one child after the other. So we got a lot of that line. We said, you know, women who said, I know what it's like. It really damaged my health not to have birth control. You know, I know what that dog feels like, having one litter after the other. I feel sorry for it. So that was a really huge learning experience. And I have to say that there was a lot of wariness, even within the volunteer base. People thought, you know, when we go into this poor community, people are going to ask us, why are you here to look after animals and not people? And we get a lot of that from the middle class. I can tell you, I mean, I've been yelled at in the street for stopping to help a ran over dog, and people will say, why don't you care for children instead of animals? We get that line so much. In the poor community, we never once got that line, ever. People were just, you know, there were people who weren't interested, there were people who weren't friendly, but overwhelmingly, people were overjoyed to have someone come in and say, we'll vaccinate, we'll deworm, we'll spay and neuter your dog or cat. People were just thrilled because they actually liked these animals, and lots of people were really concerned with their animals, and, you know, they had other priorities, of course. They were, you know, they didn't have good shoes. They didn't know if the food was going to be in next month. Of course, they couldn't even think about looking after their animals better, you know, in terms of doing these expensive procedures. That was not on their map. And when we offered those services, they were really happy. So it's really an argument that comes from kind of guilty middle-class Brazilians who aren't doing much for children or people in general.
Right.
You know? And then they say, why are you doing something for animals? Of course, I work with people and education and developmental disabilities, so that's my line. But it's amazing that if someone in Brazil spends a gigantic amount of money on, you know, a huge house or an imported car, no one asks them if why don't you use that money on people. But if you use your time and your resources and your volunteer time with animals, you get a lot of that line from the middle class, but never from the poor, never.
You've touched on the gender differences, sometimes people's perceptions of animals, and you've talked about class. Is there a sense of an indigenous knowledge or knowledges too that people are carrying forward, or is it religious beliefs in terms of Christianity, or where do you think people are drawing on in terms of their compassion for animals or concern for animals, or is it sort of just something organic that is within people?
I think, especially with the companion animals, I think it's a universal connection, you know, in terms of the exchange of care, companionship, that, you know, the companion animals just provide us with this link to nature. I think, you know, kids are always drawn to animals. There's a lot, I think there's a big gender difference that we find many, at least in Brazil, we find many more women who are volunteers for animal protection organizations, who are in the communities where we work, in the poor communities. It's usually the women who are usually easier to talk to and to convince, and who are, you know, they are in charge of caring. It's a gender difference that's socially established. So they're in charge of caring for the kids, and they're in charge of caring for the dogs and cats and parrots and what have you that they might have in the house, and they're usually easier to talk to. Brazil is very eclectic and loose, I would say, in terms of religion. It's supposedly the largest Catholic nation in the world, but people are very loose in their interpretations of Catholicism, and they also kind of syncretize those beliefs with other, like, Afro-Brazilian religions and spiritualist religions. So it's a mixed pot there. I know people within the spiritualistic traditions have a lot of respect for animals, but within the Afro-Brazilian religions, there's a lot of sacrifices in animal rituals, and that's a big point of contention with the animal rights movement that has brought the Afro-Brazilian movement and the animal rights movement into pretty contentious spots.
That's definitely a whole nother show unto itself, for sure.
Oh, definitely, yes. Although we do have a leading member of the judiciary system who's an animal rights activist, who's a very important person in the animal rights movement, and is a black leader, so he kind of has made some headway within the Afro-Brazilian ritual tradition. Not all of them use animal sacrifice, but they definitely do. And in terms of the beliefs, as in North America, there's also a gigantic disconnect between companion animals and animals used in farms and in production. And that's something that we're also stepping on you know, we kind of tend to tread lightly. It's not our main goal, because we are working on the companion animal and the circus and the cartwheel issue, just not to spread too thin. But we do have, you know, every newsletter, our website, we do have information on all the cruelty that happens to animals in the context of food production and the environmental unsustainability of eating meat. And that's something that, of course, as in North America, is a gigantic disconnect, but it's also a growing movement, vegetarianism and veganism. ProAnima welcomes volunteers who are in any kind of moment in their lifestyle, but we do encourage every single volunteer to reflect on their lifestyles, and it kind of comes naturally. People mostly, when they engage with us as volunteers, they mostly come as meat eaters, and they will either reduce their meat eating or start being vegetarian, and then, you know, start to examine veganism. We do a lot of showings of movies that show the realities behind the farm trade and the farm industry in Brazil. But we kind of do it in a very gentle manner. We are the only organization in town. We don't want to alienate anyone. We want to welcome people in any kind of moment in their lifestyle. But the board of directors is all vegan, and we welcome it. When we kind of try to make changing one's lifestyle not something to be seen as an obligation or, something that's hard and difficult, but we have a lot of fun in exchanging recipes and in finding products. It's pretty hard to find good vegan products. People envy me to death here because I tell them of the availability of all of these different products, and people are like, "Oh man, things are so easy here."
Simone, we're down to the last minute, and I really would like it. And hopefully, you've had a good experience. We'd love to have you back on the program because there's clearly so much more to talk about. I did want to turn it over to you if you had any final thoughts, and I know Carl, you also had a question. I don't know if we have time to ask it.
Simone, I think you kind of addressed my question a little bit, sort of, because I think a lot of what people hear about in North America about animal issues in South America is it's often talked about in terms of, the rainforest is being cut down to expand on farming, grazing land, and that sort of thing. But I think you kind of touched on that. It's not a major focus yet for Pro Anima.
It's not, just because we don't want to spread ourselves too thin. I mean, it's a major focus for myself as a person, and I've been doing research in that area. But it's not our kind of banner program at the moment. I mean, we put out information on that, on basically everything. I mean, on fur, on all the other issues that are happening to animals. Animals in experiments through dissection is a gigantic issue in Brazil. And farming is a gigantic issue in Brazil, especially because the practices that are being outlawed in Europe are all moving to Brazil. I mean, these are all mega, international corporations, and they're just saying, okay, we can't do this in Europe, let's go to Brazil. We're not going to be able to do this in California, we'll do this in Brazil. So veal is increasing gigantically in factory farms, battery cages. This is all on the rise in Brazil, definitely. And we put the information out there. It's just not something that Pro Anima can tackle at the moment. And it's not where we have our kind of widest web of allies with, and we feel like if we can make the progress with the companion animals and the cart horses as soon as possible, then we can start, turning our eyes towards those other issues. We kind of think of, making these trailblazing, leaving then the issues for other groups and going on to the next difficult hurdle so we can... And those are definitely on our radar, definitely.
Simone, we're basically over time, but I really did want to give you a chance to plug the website. I know this is an organization that's all volunteer run. It's a nonprofit organization, and financially, the organization has been struggling, and I want to definitely give people the opportunity to donate or to contact you to somehow help out. We have an international listenership through our podcasting, as well as a local listenership through our radio audience, so hopefully we can lend a hand. So if you could give us some information about what people could do to get involved, or any last pitch for the group, or any last words that you wanted to share, that would be great.
Excellent. Yeah. Our website is www.proanima, that's proanima, .org.br for Brazil. And if you write to us, that's in the contact us, at proanima@proanima.org.br, we will be able to answer in English. Our website is, as of yet, still in Portuguese. That's my fault. I haven't translated parts of it yet. And we will soon have a PayPal button for international donations up there. But you can contact us through email. There are many ways to help with donations, with international solidarity, and we will have very shortly a place, an English section in the website for people to know how to get involved and help us.
Great. Thank you so much, Simone. It was really an honor to speak with you today, and I hope we were able to raise some awareness about some of the work that you've been able to do, you and your volunteers have been able to do through Pro Anima. We really wanted to congratulate you on all of your hard work, and it makes a lot of sense you haven't had a chance to translate the website into English yet. Sounds like you've been very busy.
We have, and it's been a gigantic honor for us and a pleasure, and we hope to be back soon.
Okay, we'd love to have you back on again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye for now. We were just speaking with Simone de Lima, and she's a founder and board member of the Brazilian group from Brasilia, Pro Anima, and definitely suggest if you speak Portuguese, check out the website, and hopefully it'll be updated in English soon. Stay tuned for Dos Mundos coming up on CIUT 89.5 FM. You want more information about Animal Voices, please do visit our website, animalvoices.ca. Thank you, Carl, for bringing us the news and pitching in a question as well.